Auckland Grey Power is pleased to sponsor this edition of Senior Focus.
Hello, this is Richard Barter again to talk about transport issues on the Senior Focus program. I hope you're all well today. I'm going to, and probably over the next few times we meet, be speaking from a paper that was written for the National Science Challenges in 2018. And the little byword, and there's always a byword for these conferences, was building better homes, towns and cities. And this paper was prepared by researchers from Christchurch, and they include Angela Curl, Helen Fitt, Rita Dionisio McHugh, Annabel Arahuri Driscoll, Amy Fletcher and Hayden Slaughter. And the title of their paper, and it's a bit daunting, and there's a bit of language in here which I plan to kind of translate as we go. The title is called Autonomous Vehicles and Future Urban Environments, and then Exploring Changing Travel Behaviours, Built Environments and the Implications for Well-being in an Ageing Society. So the first part of this sort of series, I guess, is a bit of an introduction, and we'll just see how far we get through that today. Well, most of you probably have heard of this idea of autonomous vehicles. And these are vehicles that essentially don't need a driver. And it's been widely claimed that such vehicles will support the mobility of older adults. By mobility, we're really meaning the ability to get from here to there, get to the places that you want to go. So this claim that autonomous vehicles will support the mobility has been challenged, and the reality is it's not simple. It's for that to happen, there's a lot of complex sort of relationships between demographics, between transport systems, between our built environment, that's our towns and cities, and the health and well-being of us. That means the adoption of autonomous vehicles is far from certain. So the researchers are saying that they could improve road safety, support mobility and ageing in place for those who can no longer drive. They're saying they can facilitate independence, being part of group social inclusion, bring communities together, can mean economic and social participation. You can work, you can attend events, and can provide access to essential and non-essential services. For instance, you might call up an autonomous taxi to get you to the doctor or to church. They could also relieve pressure on land in urban centres, in other words, car parks. If you don't need to take your own car there somewhere and find it, a place for it, well, then you don't need so many car parks. And this could potentially free up space for affordable housing and important amenities. For instance, more space in hospitals. But in contrast, they could also promote urban sprawl. They could contribute to increased congestion and the dislocation of people from the places where they'd like to be. They could, in fact, reduce accessibility and increase dependence on kind of car-type ways to travel. And this could indeed trigger exclusion, isolation and loneliness for those that can't afford to own one. That sounds a bit grim, doesn't it? It's likely that the outcomes that do eventuate will be something in between. And they will be not simple, they will be complex, but it's not likely to be kind of right at that utopian end or at that very grim picture. It'll be somewhere in the middle. The thing, and this is the reason for this paper, is it's been relatively little research to date focusing on just how this sort of thing might work. So the reason for this paper is to provide information on the possible implications of what it might mean to adopt autonomous vehicles into our daily lives. It focuses on how possible changes to transport systems might influence the way we get around, but also in the environments that we live in. And in turn, what the implications might be for an ageing society and for older adults. The paper will also provide some background information on New Zealand's ageing population and on generational differences in travel behaviour. They won't, of course, have the benefit of information from the latest census. As we know, quite a lot of drama around that census. How many of you managed to fill it out online? I know it was a disappointment for a lot of people, and gradually I think we're going to get drip-fed results from the census data. Now, what do we mean by autonomous vehicles? I have sort of talked briefly about these in the past. There's a kind of a standard way of understanding autonomous vehicles, and it's described by five different levels of autonomy. Level zero, of course, is what we have today in our older cars, no automation whatsoever. Level one are vehicles that are assisted either in their steering or their acceleration and deceleration. Now, these are quite common today. A lot of cars have auto, you know, you can set the speed to cruise control and it will maintain that speed. More and more of the current cars that have that facility will actually, with a little radar, lock the speed according to the car in front of you, so it won't go any faster than the car in front. And if that car slows down, your car will slow down as well. This could be said to be a concept of no feet. Really, in a lot of cars these days, you can go a long way without needing your feet on the brake or the accelerator. And a lot of cars these days have little warnings if you drift out of the lane. They've got sensors that are looking at the white line or the lines on the side of the road, on either side, maybe in a lane in the middle. And if you move over that line, a number of different things might happen. In some cases, it's a warning, a sound. There may be a light flashing. There may be even a buzzer in your seat. And in some cases, the car will actually, if it's sure that you're not turning, you haven't indicated, after these warnings sound or flash, it may even take over and steer you back into the lane. So that's level one. Level two, we're talking about vehicles with both assisted steering and assisted acceleration and deceleration, so braking, acceleration. So we're just talking about slightly more advanced, and there'll be cars around today in that space, the more higher-end cars. Now, those sort of vehicles, you could argue that you might not need hands so much. So the first one, level one, no feet. Level two, no hands. And level three, these are cars that in some circumstances can actually drive themselves. And those circumstances are typically a motorway scenario where there is, in fact, very little happening. And it is possible for you to kind of set it on autopilot with full confidence that the car will brake if it needs to and it will stay in the driver lane. So technically, that could be seen to be no eyes. Now, level four is vehicles that can drive themselves in some circumstances without a driver. So this is one step further. The level three, the driver needed to be there, ready to take over. Level four, these are vehicles that can drive themselves in some circumstances without a human driver. Now, an example of these, and they're commonly used, are these enormous trucks used in mines, in the big open cast mines in Australia. It's very common these days that these trucks don't have drivers, and they can operate a lot more efficiently. They drive at the perfect speed, the perfect acceleration and deceleration. They're following basically the same route every day in the mine. They know exactly where they are and where other vehicles are with GPS tracking. There's someone who is watching over them, but that person is sitting in an office. So you could argue that level four, no brain. So we had no feet, no hands, no eyes, no brain. And lastly, another example of these, which is starting to happen, you know, those buses that take you from the gate at an airport out to the plane. Well, Christchurch Airport has a trial of autonomous vehicles. They're little buses that do that for you without a driver. And lastly, we're talking about level five. These are vehicles that can drive themselves in all situations that a human driver could be expected to manage. And in fact, these vehicles, and there are very few of those around, they just simply don't have a place for a driver. Well, that sounds a bit strange, doesn't it? No driver at all. Hey, we're going to listen to a track by Astrid Gilberto, Latin American type music, and this is called Corcovado, or Quiet Nights of Quiet Stars.
Quiet nights of quiet stars, quiet chords from a guitar, floating on the silence that surrounds us. Quiet thoughts and quiet dreams, quiet walks by quiet streams, and a window that looks out on Corcovado. Oh, how lovely. This is where I want to be, here with you so close to me, until the final flicker of life's ember. I who was lost and lonely, believing life was only a bitter tragic joke, have found with you the meaning of existence. So my love,
cantinho, violão, esse amor, uma canção, pra fazer feliz a quem se ama. Calma pra pensar e ter tempo pra sonhar. Da janela, vê se o Corcovado Redentor, que lindo. Quero a vida sempre assim, com você perto de mim, até o apagar da velha chama. Eu que era triste, descrente desse mundo, ao encontrar você eu conheci o que é felicidade, meu amor. Thank you.
Astrid Gilberto, Corcovado, Quiet Nights of Quiet Stars. Wasn't that a lovely, peaceful piece of music? I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. So we've just been talking a bit about autonomous vehicles. Do they sound scary to you? They sound pretty scary to me. We're going to look now just at a bit of the broader ideas of new types of new models of transport, and that's going to include things like car sharing and ride sharing, different ride hailing. That, you know, we have taxis, but these days you can call up a car using your smartphone, like Uber. We're going to talk about new forms of on-demand, door-to-door public transport. It's the idea that a bit like a shuttle coming to your house, picking you up and taking you somewhere else, but you will be with other people. And increased use of this term is called mobility as a service platforms. It's got a lovely acronym, MAS. And what this simply is, for those of you that live in Auckland, we're using a type of MAS platform when we open up our journey planner, Auckland Transport Journey Planner. And what we're talking about here is an application that helps you get from your place to the place you want to go that actually could involve getting there quite a number of different ways, and it will give you the information on how to do that. It may involve a walk to your bus stop. It could involve a bus journey to a railway station, a railway trip, and I'm thinking now of perhaps down to the downtown terminal ferries. It could involve a ferry ride. And in Auckland's case, that might take you to Waiheke Island, where with your friends you have a cup of coffee and then repeat the journey coming home. On that app, you can plan the route that you want to take, and you are often able to make choices based on cost, based on time of day, convenience, or even simply the ways that you like to travel. If you're not happy with going on a train, you can often just turn off the option to go on trains and travel by bus. For me personally, I use these in a slightly different form to work out how to get somewhere by riding my bicycle. So these sorts of things are becoming quite common. And collectively, these things are often referred to as collaborative consumption. In other words, there's a whole lot of ways to purchase the service that you want to get somewhere that you want to go. And autonomous vehicles are likely in the future to become part of that. In some cities, trains don't have drivers, not so much in New Zealand yet, but I've travelled in Vancouver and the trains there don't have drivers. So the research project that is part of this, that this paper is part of, is designed to provide guidelines to politicians and officers in the public service and local councils to guide their decisions on future transportation systems. To guide their decisions on that will be taken now that might well influence ways in which autonomous vehicles and new models of new economic models of transport are incorporated into the way we get around today. Governments around the world are developing strategies and policies around autonomous technology because doing that now gives them the opportunity to influence the outcomes. If we just leave it up to the marketplace to make the decisions for us, we could find that we have something that we don't want. And yet, those politicians, those experts, so-called experts, need to be guided, and that's what we're talking about here and what we'll be talking about over the next few weeks. We're going to listen to another shorter track by Astrid Gilberto, and this is called The Shadow of Your Smile. I hope you enjoy it.
The shadow of your smile when you are gone will color all my dreams and light the dawn. Look into my eyes, my love, and see
That was The Shadow of Your Smile by Astrid Gilberto. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did as well. So we're looking at the future of travel, and our focus is on how that is going to be for older people, how that is going to affect the well-being of aging populations. And the next part of this is the whole issue of demographics. We know that population increases and the changes that brings about that have strong influences on travel patterns. But more than the travel patterns, it has an influence on the nature of what our urban and rural areas look like, the way they're developed. And in thinking about the future then, we need to plan for the population that will inhabit that future. I read a sad story in the paper today about an elderly man in the UK that went 6 weeks without talking to anyone. And this was because a bus service to his village was discontinued due to budget cuts with that local council. It's a terrible scenario to think of. On the other hand, those of you that live in Auckland or the Waikato may have heard about this talk of a commuter train service between Auckland and Hamilton, and potentially in the future Tauranga. Now, what this could mean is that where people live could well be fashioned, could well have opportunities created by a service like this. What it could mean that in reality it could be quite conceivable not only to commute from Hamilton, but commuting from anywhere in between Hamilton and Auckland to either of these cities could be done easily, reasonably cost-effectively, and without having to sit in gridlock on that terrible motorway that every day seems to be blocked by a crash. So what we're saying here is that the way our towns and our rural areas look could in fact be changed enormously by simply putting on a train service between the two cities. Between 2000 and 2050, the global population of people aged over 60, and as I've mentioned before, that includes me, is projected to more than double. Now, of course, older people are not a homogenous group. You can't just put them into one bucket. They all have different needs, experiences, perspectives, hopes, and lifestyle. However, it's often associated with slowing down physically, and that could be physically or mentally. And these things can limit a person's mobility. So, age is associated with a range of different conditions. And some people suggest that a health-based category may be more useful in terms of what we're talking about today than absolute age in terms of understanding people's mobility. Such categories could include how active we are, diseases, impairment, and things like dementia. We'll talk about this more next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. My name's Richard. You can contact me 021 277 1213. Bye for now.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus, and do note Senior Focus is one word.